Later, Archie, Betty, and Jughead sat in their favorite booth in Pop's Diner. All three had milkshakes in front of them. Betty had her laptop open with the web page of the local newspaper displayed. The headline read, "Riverdale Rippers Revealed." Underneath the headline, it read, "Socialite Veronica Lodge and Riverdale High football star Reggie Mantle, true culprits behind the Ripper murders, remain at large." There were pictures of both Veronica and Reggie, and next to them was an unflattering picture of Jughead. The headline above his picture read, "Local glutton Jughead Jones exonerated." The three teens looked at the article for a moment.
"Reggie and Ronnie as the Riverdale Rippers. Works for me. Not like they didn't kill plenty of other people."
Betty closed the laptop.
"And thankfully, because of my mother and her connections to the press, it's working for the authorities right now, too."
"Yeah, about that, Bets. Thanks. I know we haven't exactly been on the best terms lately, what with me being a murdering werewolf and you trying to murder me, but..."
"But nothing. The Coopers crossed a line when they decided it was okay to whack Jellybean, and she's the reason I did all of this. For her. Not for you."
Betty scowled at Jughead.
"So listen to me. And listen good, Jones. This is your last chance with me. We'll try to find a cure again, see if that works. But whether we do or don't, I'll be watching you like a hawk with binoculars. There are no slip-ups this time. If you even so much as harm a bug, I'll make what Dutch and his crew were gonna do to you look like a friggin' sock hop."
Betty sat back in the booth with her arms folded. Archie smiled awkwardly.
So okay then. But now let me be the first to go on record as saying, I happen to like sock hops."
Jughead smiled.
Yeah. So do I. I mean, I'm not much for dancing, and they're sort of outdated and all, and there hasn't been one in forever, but I do remember us all coming here to Pop's together after. And I did like that.
Archie and Jughead raised their milkshakes.
"So did I. And so did you, Betts. You can't tell me any different. And, yeah, we all know the stakes here. But can't we just try? Try to actually be friends again?"
Betty reluctantly raised her milkshake.
"We can try, but no promises. Especially because while this sounds all well and good, there is another element here that we're not taking into account. My Aunt Elena."
Elena stood tight-lipped with her hands on her hips in her office and observed the three teens on a large monitor.
"Sure, she let us go. But believe me, it wasn't because I'm her favorite niece or she's suddenly become sympathetic to the plight of werewolves. She's got a bigger play here, and heaven help us when she lets us know what it is."
Elena was surprised at Betty's astuteness. That night, Jughead tucked his little sister into bed.
"Well, Jelly, you wanted me home, and now I'm home. But be careful what you wish for, as they say, because it's not going to be all sunshine and cheeseburgers."
He leaned toward her with a smile.
"Now I'm going to have to watch over you. Especially now. So get used to me being the pain in the butt overprotective brother. Well, in between me changing into a werewolf, of course."
She leaned up and hugged him.
"Hey, I'll take it. Even the werewolf changing part."
Jellybean laid back down on her bed and pulled the covers up to her chest while Jughead stood and moved to the door. He stood in the doorway and flipped off the light.
"And I'll take you never having to go through that. I'm glad the Coopers were off base about that. Good night, Jelly Belly."
"Yeah."
He looked back at her in the darkness for a moment and then left the room. After Jughead left, Jellybean's eyes turned red and then started to take on a yellow glow. Her face shifted and a snout grew. Her ears lengthened and her hands, folded neatly on top of the covers, grew claws. She smiled.
"Good thing they were off base about that, huh?"
In the sleepy, yet growing hamlet that was Riverdale in the early 1690s, a large crowd of townspeople stood in the town square. The town, led by the magistrate, had gathered that evening for a witch trial. Goody Constance Jones, a woman and an ancestor of Jughead Jones, was on the lifted stage along with several other women, all tied to stakes. Torches were at the ready, and the magistrate, clad in the robes of his profession, stepped to the front of the small stage. He held a large Bible in one hand adjusted his spectacles, and took in the crowd.
Goody Jones, you are charged with acts of witchcraft, Satanism, and lycanthropy.
He turned to Goody and held the Bible defensively between the two of them.
How do ye respond to these charges?
Goody stared at the man for a long moment and spat in his face. He stepped back and pulled a handkerchief from his pocket. He stared at her coldly for a long moment, then turned again to the crowd.
Light the stake!
A man stepped forward, torch in hand, and began to light the straw piles at the feet of both Constance Jones and the other women. Even as the stake was lit under her, Constance remained cold, defiant, proud even.
Constance Jones, in the name of the Lord, I condemn ye to—
Wait!
The magistrate stared at Constance.
'Tis true. I'm a werewolf.
Constance glanced out at the crowd as a malicious smile slowly formed on her face.
But I'm not alone.
The flames began to rise, and Constance's eyes began to glow. Her face began to shift and contort as she slowly took on her werewolf form.
More who are watching.
Waiting.
Her body grew larger, yet the ropes held. The flames began to dance higher around her, even as she continued to turn into a werewolf. The crowd slowly backed away from the monster.
For that day to come, and that day is coming soon, believe me, when we will all rise up and murder every single one of ye sons of bitches.
Her transformation complete, Constance stood tied to the stake in her full werewolf form. The flames began to consume her.
And so, Constance Jones was burned at the stake for being a werewolf.
Bobby Suarez, a reporter, stood in front of a large green screen that was showing the reenactment of the burning of Goody Jones. She was in a large TV studio and spoke directly to the camera. Grips and producers stood around watching her. She was finishing up a segment on her TV show.
But was she actually a werewolf? That's what the legend says, anyway. And legends about werewolves and Riverdale go hand in hand. We'll explore those legends and more on tonight's program.
Behind her, on the green screen, a blood-red title card popped up. It had black lettering and read,
Werewolves of Riverdale, The Untold Story.
Bobby crossed behind the modern-looking desk as another picture of a werewolf popped up behind her on the screen. This one was silently snarling and chewing on a severed head.
So join us as we separate fact from some very frightening fiction.
The program shifted scenes. Bobby Suarez now stood on an empty street in Riverdale.
Werewolves. They have frightened and fascinated us from seemingly the beginning of time.
An image of the big bad wolf in bed as Red Riding Hood cautiously approached flashed on the screen, followed by
everything from fairy tales like Little Red Riding Hood,
an image of Lon Chaney as the Wolfman,
to movie monsters like Lon Chaney and the Wolfman.
The picture of Chaney faded, and when it came back to Bobby, she was standing at the mouth of an alley, graffiti on the brick walls behind her. She gestured to the nearest wall, and as the camera panned to it, a large chalk wolf head drawing filled the screen next to her.
But here in Riverdale, werewolves have a very different meaning to locals. A dark and possibly all too real meaning.
The show cut back to Bobby in the studio. A book cover appeared on the screen behind her. The title read, The Legend of the Beast of Riverdale, and seemed to be a take on the legend of Sleepy Hollow. The book was old, the leather binding cracked and slightly water damaged. On the cover was a crude drawing of a werewolf facing off against a young couple from that era by a river. Bobby gestured at the screen.
Tales like the one about Constance Jones have been with Riverdale from its very start. After all, what Riverdale grade school child doesn't know the story of The Legend of the Beast of Riverdale?
The book on screen opened and flipped pages. It stopped on a page showing a drawing of a young couple. They stood by the River Dale, for which the town was named. They were talking and clearly in love. In the woods behind them, one could see a set of werewolf eyes glowing and watching them.
Published in 1820 and written by Charles Washington Cooper,
the page flipped on screen and it displayed the couple again. This time, the woman cowered as the man held a sword and threatened the now visible werewolf as it grabbed his coat.
The classic yarn tells us about a young couple who are attacked by a mysterious beast one night.
The page flipped again, and the on-screen image showed the werewolf with a missing arm. It cowered before the young man. Though difficult to see, the paw that had been severed still held on to the man's coat.
But after they successfully drive the monster off by slicing off its paw,
the page flipped again to another image that showed the couple escaping from the creature. The next page showed the couple safe, but also in surprise and confusion at the severed and now human hand that still clung to the young man's coat. The image stayed on the screen for a long moment. Then the screen faded. In the next shot, Bobby Suarez was back on the street.
They soon find that beast may not have been a beast at all. And that's what the residents of Riverdale have discovered lately.
She stood in front of the sign for Riverdale High School. The large brick sign was now doubling as a makeshift memorial for some of Riverdale's most loved citizens.
That their beasts may be all too real.
Bobby stood among the flowers, candles, and pictures heaped around the sign. There were framed photos of Ethel Muggs, Pop Tate, Bingo Wilkins, Dilton Doily, Cheryl Blossom, Big Moose, Mr. Weatherby, and Miss Grundy. She stepped carefully among the keepsakes as the camera followed her.
Pop Tate, the beloved owner of Pop's Chocolate Shop, school teacher Miss Grundy, and most recently, Moose, Cheryl Blossom, and school principal Mr. Weatherby himself, all recently brutally murdered.
Bobby turned back to the camera, serious.
But was it werewolves? Or something else? Something far more sinister.
In the next shot, Bobby stood inside the empty school by the trophy case.
Something all too real.
The camera panned from Bobby to the trophy case. Inside was a shot of Reggie on the football field, a big smile on his face. He was in his football uniform and had his helmet off, posing after scoring a touchdown. Two women stood next to him.
Reggie Mantle, school bully and football star.
The camera stayed on the photo for a few seconds before panning to a shot of Veronica Lodge, smiling in her cheerleader uniform.
Veronica Lodge, rich socialite and homecoming queen.
The camera panned back to Bobby, a serious look on her face as she gestured at the photos.
Two all-American kids. They could just as easily be your friends, your neighbors, your classmates. But in this case, they may just be the worst murderers Riverdale has ever seen.
The shot cut to a reenactment. A close-up of a striking and chiseled young actor made to look like Reggie Mantle. His eyes were wide, and his hands twitched.
What was it that ultimately drove Reggie Mantle to kill? Drugs? A psychotic break? Whatever it was, the Riverdale Ripper murders, as they would eventually be known, would soon bring a community to its knees.
The shot cut to a darkened alley. An older, gray-haired woman with glasses who looked very much like the departed Miss Grundy walked down the alley. She glanced over her shoulder fearfully as the young actor playing Reggie appeared in the background, a large knife in his hand. A jump cut in the editing now showed a close-up of Miss Grundy, a look of fear on her face, as the actor playing Reggie, now clad in a cheap werewolf mask, held a knife to her throat.
With Mantle taking advantage of Riverdale's werewolf legends and donning a mask, nowhere became safe from his madness.
The shot cut to the same alley, but moments after actor Reggie had cut off actor Grundy's head. He held it up as stage blood dripped from the neck. The mannequin body of Miss Grundy sat in a pile of rubbish next to him. The next shot was a still photo of Reggie in the werewolf mask as he slashed at patients in the hospital. The shot then returned to a somber Bobby Suarez.
Riverdale High, Pop's Chocolate Shop, the local hospital, and it would only get worse when his killing spree gained a sinister partner in crime.
A shot of Reggie as he ran from the hospital while a smiling Veronica waited for him in their getaway car. The shot now cut to Reggie and Veronica wearing werewolf masks as they killed Dilton Doily. The shot faded, and when the next one came up, it was on a cheap set made to look like an abandoned haunted house. In it, Reggie and Veronica, in their werewolf masks, stood threateningly over two actors playing Jughead and Jellybean. The actor playing Reggie pointed the knife at Jughead.
As Mantle would suddenly turn his sights to longtime nemesis Jughead Jones, framing him for the murders and even going so far as to kidnap him and his sister Jellybean.
On screen, actors playing both Betty and Archie accidentally happened on the scene. The shot froze in a standoff between them all. A smash cut to Betty, Archie, Jughead, and Jellybean followed. They were in a red convertible, speeding away from the abandoned amusement park. Jughead and Jellybean looked relieved in the backseat of the car.
The Jones siblings would ultimately be rescued by classmates Betty Cooper and Archie Andrews.
The camera cut to still photos of the real Reggie and Veronica.
Though Mantle and Lodge, unfortunately, still very much remain at large.
The camera cut again to a video shot of Betty Cooper as she exited her front door. She glanced up at the camera and did not look happy.
This program attempted to talk with Betty Cooper, one of the key witnesses who helped crack the Mantle Lodge case.
Betty turned around to go back into her house and glared at the camera. There was no sound in the shot, but she turned and approached the camera, holding her hand up in a gesture that indicated she didn't want to be filmed. The cameraman didn't stop filming, so the next shot was a close-up of Betty's face as she followed through with a solid right hook to the cameraman's jaw.
But needless to say,
the camera and cameraman clattered to the sidewalk. The largely undamaged camera focused on Betty's boots as she walked out of frame.
She had no comment.
The camera cut to an establishing shot of Pop's Diner. In it, Bobby Suarez could be seen through a window, sitting at a booth. When the shot jumped to inside, it showed Bobby sitting with the real Archie Andrews and both Jughead and Jellybean Jones.
We had better luck with others involved. As we sat down with Jughead and Jellybean Jones and their rescuer Archie Andrews over lunch at Pop's. So, Jughead, for a while there, it was believed you were the Riverdale Ripper, to the extent that you even became a fugitive from the law.
Jughead smiled sheepishly as he raised a burger to his lips.
Yeah. How ridiculous was that? Me, the Riverdale Ripper? The only thing I'm capable of murdering is cheeseburgers.
Archie glanced over at Jughead, then back to Bobby.
And you're doing a hell of a job, considering that's already your fourth burger. As for the murders, look, I kind of blame myself. Reggie was always playing second fiddle to me. And Ronnie? I rejected her more times than I can count.
He looked down for a moment.
Guess they just snapped one day.
And yet, it was Jughead that became the focal point of their obsession. The framing, the kidnapping. Why you, Jughead?
Jughead put down his burger and wiped his mouth.
I don't know.
He reached across the table and took Jellybean's hand in his.
All I know is how this has all affected my family. And that's what bothers me most. I just wish we could all get back to how things were somehow. Though I also know it's probably too late for that.
Bobby turned from Jughead to Jellybean.
Especially with Mantle and Lodge still out there. What about you, Jellybean? Aren't you afraid this might not be over? That the Riverdale Rippers may come for you again?
Jellybean stared at her almost empty plate of fries for a long moment, then looked up at Bobby as tears came to her eyes.
I...
Overcome, she stood and quickly walked towards the restrooms as tears streamed down her cheeks. Archie and Jughead watched her go.
Poor kid. This whole ordeal has really affected her.
Yeah, even her appetite, which I can tell you is very un-Jones-like. Speaking of which...
Jughead gestured at Bobby's plate.
You gonna finish that?
I, in fact, did not finish it.
A quick fade-out followed, and when the camera came back up, Bobby was sitting in a studio. Across from her sat a distinguished-looking older man in a well-tailored suit. He had white hair and glasses, and looked to be in his early 60s.
But he sure did. Jughead Jones may not be a werewolf, but as this reporter can attest, he certainly has the appetite of one.
She gestured to her guest in the chair next to her.
And now, joining me to discuss werewolves, their legends, and how this all applies to him, is Hiram Lodge.
Lodge nodded at the camera.
Now, full disclosure, Mr. Lodge. Word on the street is that you're in the process of purchasing the network this program is on. Or have I heard incorrectly?
No, Miss Suarez. The street has this one right, I'm here to confirm.
But why? Why did you feel it necessary to make such a move at this time?
Because I need a platform. One from where I can uncover the truth about werewolves in Riverdale. To get answers once and for all.
Answers that would be quite personal to you. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Lodge? After all, in addition to what's on with Veronica at the moment, your family does have its own history with werewolves.
I believe you're referring to the incident involving my uncle, Senator Philip Lodge.
On the screen behind them, another silent reenactment began. The first shot was of Senator Lodge posing for a photo in his office in 1970.
It's quite the tragic story, really.
The reenactment moved with Lodge's telling of the story. The screen moved to a car driving down a highway. It was night, and the car was taking turns too quickly.
My uncle was driving a young woman home one evening. One that was not his wife, admittedly.
The shot now moved to the back seat of the car, looking out as the headlights revealed a giant, snarling werewolf running at the car.
Philip claims it was dark that night, which is why he didn't see the creature until it was upon them.
The reenactment showed Philip whipping the steering wheel to the side and missing the werewolf by inches.
The good news was that he swerved and managed to narrowly miss whatever it was. The bad news? He didn't miss ending up in the river as a result.
The screen cut to an underwater shot of the actor playing Philip Lodge as he swam from the submerged car towards the surface.
Philip, a former All-American swimmer, was able to reach safety.
The camera showed the actor playing Philip's girlfriend trapped inside the submerged car, pounding on the windows, fear in her eyes.
The girl was not as fortunate.
There was a flurry of quick edits, with the senator trying to dodge the press as cameras flashed around him. He wore sunglasses and tried to cover his face in several shots.
Philip would be hounded in the days and months that followed. The press, the general public, none of them bought his story about the incident with the werewolf in the road. There was more to it, they said. He was covering something up, they said.
The screen now showed a silhouette, in red, of a man with a gun in his mouth.
In the end, he was forced to resign due to the controversy. 4 months later, he spray-painted his office with his brains.
The screen turned off, and the camera focused on Hiram and Bobby.
Quite a story. Such horrible family history. And now with Veronica under investigation...
Who's innocent, by the way? Let me make that abundantly clear. These insane notions that she and Reggie are the Riverdale Rippers, these even more ridiculous rumors that they're werewolves, will be proven false.
Lodge turned from Bobby to face the camera.
My Uncle Philip may never have been exonerated, but Veronica will be. I can promise you that. I can also promise that I will use this station and every resource at my disposal to not only uncover the truth behind all the werewolf stories in Riverdale, but also bring the real Riverdale Ripper to justice, whoever they may be.
Bobby sat stunned by Lodge's promise. She quickly regained her composure.
I wish you luck, Mr. Lodge, because there is one thing I, and I do believe many of our viewers here in Riverdale, would agree with.
The screen behind her lit up with production photos from the program. There were still photos of the reenactments of Goody Jones being burned from the 1600s, the two actors playing Reggie and Veronica in werewolf masks, even a drawing of a large werewolf with glowing red eyes. Bobby faced the camera.
It's time that the mysteries involving werewolves here in Riverdale be solved. It's time we learned the truth.
The shot faded to black as the credits rolled. Archie Comics, Jughead, The Hunger, Volumes 1 through 3. Written by Frank Thierry. Archie Comics, Jughead the Hunger is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2018 Archie Comics. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the authors and Archie Comics. Copyright 2021 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Narrated by Eric Messner. With performances by Alejandro Ruiz as Jughead, Rob Moreira as Archie, Joel David Santner as Reggie, Tria Leong as Betty, Laura C. Harris as Veronica, Matthew Schley as Milton, Tanya Milojevich as Midge, Rob McFadden as Moose, Bradley Foster Smith as Beau, Taylor Coan as Jellybean, and Terrence Aselford as Principal Weatherby. Also with Andrew Mims, Chris Davenport, Dawn Ursula, Kelly Baskin, Michael John Casey, Nora Ashrati, Richard Rowan, Torian Brackett, Yasmin Twazon, Catherine Aselford, Chris Stinson, Eric Messner, Drew Copas, James J. Johnson, Joey Sorlis, John Keelty, Karen Novak, Katie Booth, Ken Jackson, Lise Bruneau, Ayusha Navab, Lydia Craniotis, Nanette Savard, Nazia Chowdhury, Scott McCormick, Stephen Carpenter, Rainer Gabriel, and Donald Guzzi. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Eric Messner. Graphic audio dialogue editing and sound design by Dave Fernandez, Grayson Holland, and David Zitney. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producer, Angie Cornette. If you enjoyed Archie Comics' Jughead the Hunger, you might also enjoy Vampironica, Volume 1, by Meg and Greg Smallwood, or Archie, Volumes 1 through 4. These titles and many more are available in graphic audio. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in graphic audio.
Now available from Graphic Audio.
Hi, my name is Archie Andrews. Welcome to Riverdale.
Archie, one of the longest-running titles in comic book history, is rebooted here in this full-cast audio drama, adapted from the best-selling comic.
I met a girl the other night. Okay, well, met. Not so much. More like escaped the wrath of the father of. She and I locked eyes for only a second. The look she shot me? Oh, it was like... like that.
Two of the most talented creators in comics, Mark Waid and Fiona Staples, create a surprising and definitive take on Archie's origin, a story that has never been told. Meet America's favorite teenager, Archie Andrews.
You rock, Archie!
You should start your own band.
I am torn between never wanting to go through that again and doing it every night for the rest of my life.
His oddball, food-loving best friend, Jughead.
You keep burgers in your locker? Lunch isn't for 4 hours. You can't cross the desert without a canteen.
Girl next door, Betty Cooper.
Promise me we'll always stay this way. Promise me you'll stay the same.
Have we met? I haven't changed socks since that time we got lost in the marsh.
And well-to-do snob, Veronica Lodge.
I've never been in a public school before. What's that smell? Is that what they call crack?
As they embark on a modern reimagining of the beloved Archie world. It's all here. The love triangle, friendship, humor, charm, and lots of fun, but with a decidedly modern twist.
What's up with you and the Kardashian clone?
Jug! I'm under a spell! You gotta help me!
I will. I promise. I'll do everything in my power to bring you back to...
Andy!
Huh?
If Classic Archie is a Saturday morning cartoon, this new series is prime time.
Hey! Watch where you point that nail gun, Dilton! Those things are dangerous!
But you were about to...
Sheesh, Dilton! Use your head! Always point it upwards!
Graphic Audio and Archie Comics present Archie, Volume 1, by Mark Waid and Fiona Staples, with Annie Wu and Veronica Fish. Available now.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,500 titles to choose from. Listen to over 150 binge-worthy series From sci-fi to fantasy, to graphic novels, to mystery thrillers, to action-adventure, to westerns, and more. Check out our exclusive titles, available only in our dramatized adaptation format. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase a download series set at graphicaudio.net. You can also earn loyalty reward points, redeemable towards future online purchases. Stream audiobooks immediately or download them to listen offline on your mobile phone or tablet using our Graphic Audio Access app, which is available on all Android and Apple devices. We like being radically different when it comes to our audiobook productions. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Visit our web store today at graphicaudio.net.